You're listening to the Axis Realty Podcast, the official podcast of Axis Real Estate, your full-service real estate brokerage in Phoenix, Arizona. Hosted by Jason Sellers and Ted Work. Jeremy, how you doing?
Thank you, Ted, for having me back. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for coming back. We got Jeremy Schachter again on this episode. And today we're going to be talking more about kind of where the market's at and how that is affected by Jeremy's business.
To learn more about Jeremy, tune into the last episode. We went over a great conversation about what got him started in mortgages and mortgage history from, what, 97-ish to like through the housing crash and all that. That was a good conversation. I thought it was good.
Yeah, sure. Thank you.
But now we want to focus a little bit more about like what's going on now and what you see and, you know, what we're experiencing in the real estate side. I'll say this. What did you learn during the last downturn that you feel is applicable to what's going on now?
I would say real estate is still a great investment. It's probably one of your biggest investments that you will make in your entire life. And when I first got my first home back in 2001, I think, I forgot what year, I bought that house. I was so excited, and then I sold it and I made a profit, and I made a profit and paid off my student loans from University of Arizona, you know, 'cause I had to get loans to go there. And, usually the biggest person's wealth is with real estate. And, some people get into it for a quick buck and a quick flip. Other people look at it as a long-term investment. So, you know, markets go up and they go down, and you can't time the market, and you can't just like stock market. So, I believe that real estate is still a good investment. Obviously, diversify your investments with stocks, real estate, some maybe some less conservative or more conservative things to do. But where people truly make their most financial gains is real estate. So I think people get spooked when the markets go up and go down, as well as interest rates. And, but I still think it's a great investment to buy your own home.
Yeah. And you touched on this a little bit last time where I think you mentioned you felt that the Fed was slow to react in 2021.
Sure.
And a lot of people, I've been watching, a lot of economists and financial people talk about things like that and where we were, and the Fed was like, there's no inflation yet. This is like 2020, 2021. And on the same side, you're like, well, you're just giving away a lot of money right to people to float through COVID. So that's kind of by definition, like inflation when you give away free money. Sure. And so a lot of people might argue that they were late to raise the rate, and maybe now they're too heavy on the backside where people are saying there's already signs that we are slowing in the economy, and maybe and they're projecting to do another increase by the end of the year.
Absolutely.
Still.
Sure.
But what I would say is that the real estate market is probably one of the largest markets in the country in terms of volume of money that's transacted, and also the area that is most affected by changes in interest rate. So if you're going to have an impact on the economy and you make a change to the interest rate, the first thing that goes is going to be the housing, because that's kind of housing and autos is kind of what I read was those are the big ticket items that most people need financing for.
Oh, absolutely. And, the feds were pretty straightforward and said they have to slow the housing market. I mean, from in a pandemic in 2020 up until probably about April, May of 2022, it was bonkers. I mean, I remember seeing contracts, 90,000, 100,000 over asking price, waiving all the inspections, waiving their deposit. So they have to buy this house. Doesn't matter how much the home didn't appraise for, the shortage.
Or there's a big penalty.
They would lose their earnest money. And these weren't like $2,000, $5,000. This is like $25,000 for first-time home buyer. So me, I blame the real estate agent, honestly, because they should never put a first-time home buyer in that. But first-time home buyer should accept that they're adults and they sign a contract and they're doing that. So for 2.5 years, pretty much, it was crazy. Interest rates were ultra low. COVID happened. Zoom happened, where people can live and work anywhere. So tons of people from the Northwest and California flocked to Arizona because we had relatively cheap housing as well as living expenses at the time. And it was just a different type of market. So if you can make California salaries and your company didn't have a reduction because now you live in Arizona, it's like, why not move to Arizona? You know, so we had an influx of people coming in here. It was chaotic. And then like all of a sudden it stopped. And we're not stopped. It slowed dramatically because we're still selling and closing on homes. But from December 2021, when rates were in the threes, to maybe like March of 2022, they went almost 2.5% higher, which has never been seen before. And that affects mortgage payments for people and qualifications. And all of a sudden people were like, I can't qualify, or I'm waiting for those rates to go back to the twos and threes, which are not going to happen. So the mentality of people started pulling back. So I say this time and time again, a market can go from a seller's market to a buyer's market in the blink of an eye. And that's what happened pretty much May, June, roughly. And now we're, you know, into, you know, October, where rates are upwards of a little bit over 7%. Which is still a low rate comparable to...
Well, my first rate when I bought my first house out here in 2000. Paid $100,000 for it, and my rate was, I think, 8 7/8 or 8 5/8.
And you're like, thank you. And then you refinance probably into the sixes and probably refinance more. And not saying you have to like refinance all the time, but you know, rates go up and they go down. And I was talking to this other real estate agent who brought up a really good point. Like when news bleeds, people read. I think people read. So they want to hear like the gloomy stuff, the horrible stuff. You know, that's what sells in a newspaper. So, or news media these days. So everyone's comparing.
It's funny you say that. Just a real interesting tidbit, I think, because that's always been the case.
Always.
I mean, it's only in your face now because I think media is more in your face now. But I'll bet it just kind of... If you go back 150 years and picked up a newspaper, nobody would read the newspaper if it was like something boring.
I mean, that's right? The whole
thing. Or something
with,
happy.
That's the whole thing with yellow journalism, like lying to make shit more interesting so that people buy your papers. It's like, yeah, that's right. That's why you need journalistic integrity.
Totally. Politicians have been lying since day one.
Yeah, no, totally.
And all sides. And journalists have been hyping up things for centuries.
Totally. Totally.
I mean, when you buy a paper, you know, it's like, oh, that catches your eye. You know, if it was like, oh, how to make yourself happy.
Nothing happened today. Yeah. I want to buy that.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is like it just keeps going. So we get desensitized to what was interesting like 5 years ago. And now to catch your attention, you got to be even more
intrigued by
over the top doom with and gloom. Your whatever you say. It's
But what this other real estate agent said, which is it makes sense. You know, you hear like, sales are down 43%. Rates are up this. If you take out 2020 and 2021, just wipe them out, call them leap years and just get rid of them. Mm-hmm. We're actually in a normal market. Mm-hmm. On each year, on average, across America, we sell about 5 million homes a year. We're about that at this moment. So when someone's comparing, oh, listings are up 47% or price drops are down 23% and they're comparing it year over year, of course they are, because 2020, 2021 were wild, wild west. It was crazy. It was bonkers. Sure. So if you took that out, we're actually not as bad as what we think we are at. So I would say, you know, don't worry about what the news media is saying. I think prices are going to come down because they can't go up, 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 and up all the time. You know, affordability is a really important factor. And I think what the feds are doing are trying to slow the market a little bit with raising rates and interest rates. And then eventually they're coming down. And I listen to a lot of people that are much smarter than myself that are saying the rates are probably going to be in the fives, which it's funny because everyone's like, fives, I'll take fives any day. But like when they were in the twos and threes, five, oh my God, that's so bad.
Yeah, yeah. It's relative.
And the way that I always thought about this is that the interest rate, when you have such a large number of people who need financing on a home, if the interest rate doubles, that's effectively like the value of the underlying real estate doubling.
Right.
So if right. the rate goes up from 2.5% to 5%, your cost of that same house
it's gonna double.
Is double.
Right.
And if it, and conversely, like, so they've just eaten up all of the potential increase in real estate value by adjusting the rate.
And they're trying to slow it down a little bit. And honestly, it needed to be slowed down. I mean, you can't have appreciations of 20, 30, 40% in a year and income is not drastically changing that much. So honestly, I feel bad for the first time home buyer because I actually feel bad for the real estate agent the most because they have sellers that are sometimes unrealistic. Like my neighbor sold my house 8 months ago and it's worth this. And then why isn't it worth now?
Well, that's the funny thing. I always like, you listen to all these commercials, like, you could get 50, 70,000 more than, like, okay, well, hold on a second. We're not getting you $70,000 more than the home is worth. We're getting you $70,000 more than you thought it was worth. So are we saying that you're just out of touch with reality?
Oh, totally out of touch. You close your eyes and you throw a dart at the wall and say, oh, I think my home is worth $1 million when it's really yeah. worth $700,000.
You've been under a rock for 10 years and your home has gone up in value. So, you know, we're just getting you market rate. That's what I always tell people is like, listen, I don't get you more money than the market will get you.
Right.
Like I just get you on the playing field. Right. You know, I don't know if you're going to be on the 30-yard line or the 40-yard line. My job is to get you in the stadium, on the field, and in conversations with people who are actually buying homes or selling them. So that's the job. And then from there, we negotiate and get to exactly where the market is.
Right. And there's things, check marks, like you get an appraisal. The appraisal needs to come at purchase price. If it doesn't, you can overpay for the property or renegotiate that. Now I'm seeing sellers giving credits to buyers. So for people that need a lower interest rate, you can use a seller credit to buy down the rate. So the market's definitely shifted. It's not a 2008, and I can quote so many different articles because lending guidelines are much stricter now than they were in 2008. You have to put money down for the most part. And I just think we're going to have a small correction. I still think that real estate is still a great investment to do, as well as buying an investment property to have passive income. But you have to be a smart investor. You know, I remember back in the day, buying an investment property, you can do it with zero down, no money in the bank. I mean, who's going to, it's like giving a child a car and saying, drive to Las Vegas. You know, it's like,
you'll get me later. So you can pay me back.
So these days, you know, you can actually buy an investment property for 15% down, which I don't recommend because the rates are high and mortgage insurance and all that stuff. Ideally, having 25% down would get you the most competitive rates. Having an emergency fund, crazy. I know it's like a Susie Orman of logic, but you know, you can't. So what lenders do when they use rental income is they use 75% of what that rental income is. And do you know why we use 75%?
Well, why do we use 75%, Jared?
Why? Because you don't always have 100% occupancy or vacancy in a rental. People move out. It takes time to clean up the property. It takes time to find the perfect renter. Sometimes that renter is not good. You kick them out. So, you know, there's new rules in place back when Frank Dodd, regulation in the government to make loans more, not harder to get, but more logical.
Well, one of the things I remember from back in the day, the Wild West of the mortgages was you could pick your own appraiser.
So oh, I remember this.
Think about that for a second.
That sounds a little bit biased.
Ted. You do appraisals,
this
right?
This house looks fine. Let me sign a thing. Great.
No, I mean, it's happened. Like, so, you know, Jason's buying a house. You're an appraiser.
You
like,
know it.
I'm like,
as of now,
Ted Work Appraisal Company. Hey, I need to get this home at $400,000. You know what? I think it's worth $350. Well, Bob Jones down the street says he can get $400. You know, I really don't want to give him all my business. And for whatever reason, they make it happen. So there's rules like that now.
Isn't it crazy that we didn't have that rule before?
Well, it is crazy.
I mean, it was kind of an unspoken rule. Like, it was supposed to be value. It was supposed to be the correct value, and appraisers were supposed to have it. But they got put in this position where they would lose business
if they didn't get value.
And that kind of reminds me of, did you watch the movie The Big Short?
Oh, yeah. I get quoted with that.
So, I mean, during these times where it feels weird or the market feels, I like to go watch these things of like that. And do you remember the scene do you remember the scene where they go and they talk to the ratings agency?
Yes.
And she's like, what do you want me to do? Like, if we don't give them an A+ rating on these bonds, then they're just going to go down the street to the other ratings company and they're going to get the same thing. So we're going to fudge the numbers and make it happen for them so we can make money.
It's all about greed and money. And honestly, everyone was a part of it. Lenders, borrowers.
Everyone in that sector had something to gain from it.
Everyone had something to gain from it. And we learned from it. There's so many rules now that they weren't back then. And that's why I can't compare 2008 to now. Sure. Like, so for the appraisals, it's called HVCC. I don't even know the appraiser until I get the report back. We can't bait and switch clients. So if I say, okay, it's going to cost this, it has to cost that. Or I have to do it's called a valid change of circumstance. So if Jason's credit dropped or he went from a primary home to an investment, the rates go up. That's a valid change of circumstance. But I can't say, you know what? I don't really like Jason that much, so I'm going to charge him 2 points now because he's asking me way too many questions. You can't do that. Back then, you can do whatever you want to do. So
the PIA fee?
Pain in the ass fee, yes. Because there is a PIW, which is a property inspection waiver where you don't need an appraisal, believe it or not, for certain types of loans. But PIA fee, yes, I can charge that on many clients. Yeah,
I know there's these rules because of the crash in 08, but were these things that were rules in the past and that maybe got repealed or that were... Like, because there are things that you're talking about that sound so obvious,
right?
That it's ridiculous that they weren't rules just kind of when they're like, oh, the housing market. All right, let's, here are the rules for the housing market. What's like, it
there was no rules.
It's ridiculous.
And loan officers weren't licensed. So you can be a criminal and have a rap sheet and sell a mortgage.
I think it just evolved over time. Right. So if you go back to the advent of buyer representation, right?
Sure.
Prior to that, this is the time buyer beware, because the buyer was not represented. Every agent out there, if you were walking around with Sally, real estate agent, and you went to buy a property, Sally actually worked for the seller.
Okay.
That's the way the laws kind of played out.
Okay.
Agency, representation, every agent represented the seller in the transaction. Right. Nobody represented the buyer. So what came out of that is buyer representation.
I see, yes.
And then that became a thing. But I think the evolution of all of this just comes down to, like, eventually things erode. So they start off with good intention and you come out with, like, I have a fiduciary duty to the buyer, or a fiduciary duty to the seller. And then over time, those things erode. And then when more and more people are doing it, and maybe the first one or two things or the first year or whatever are a little bit innocuous, or they're like not intentional,
sure,
but then they become part of the market.
Yeah.
And then the market doesn't have anywhere else to go.
Yeah.
And it just kind of continues down that path
in order to be competitive.
Then all of a sudden you wake up and you're like, well, we'll call this appraiser because you know you're going to get more money on that.
Sure.
But on the appraisal note, I'll just mention, in the last 6 months, you know, we're in contract on a property to buy right now. And for one of our clients, the contract price is under the appraised value, right? 6 months ago, it was standard to pay over appraised value.
Absolutely.
And it was standard to have appraisal waivers in the contract and all of those things. So I just think that's interesting, you know, given that appraisers are third party now and more separated from all the transactional work, that's a good spot to be in. And I feel better about the appraised values than I did back in the day.
Yeah, I just had an appraisal come back $50,000 higher.
Yeah.
Than the purchase price.
So, but to your point about being good investment or a good opportunity to buy, okay, so you might be paying more on your interest than you would have otherwise, but you may find yourself in an immediate equity position.
So I say
theoretically,
marry the house. Paper. So marry the house, date the rate, divorce the rent. So fall in love with if you're buying a house for yourself, fall in love with the home because you have to have a place to stay. You know, you have to have housing, and rents are going through the roof, and they are coming down a little bit, but they're still very high. A home is a personal thing that you see your family in. You know, you see having holidays with, you know, and people are like, oh, I'm going to time the market. The market's going to drop 20%. It's like, you know, don't focus on timing the market so much as finding the perfect home. And, you know, I remember it was one agent, she put it on Facebook or Instagram or whatever. She got like 30 offers on a home. She literally laid out all the contracts back, you know, a year ago. 30 people wanted this one home because we had an inventory shortage as well. So we had about 4,300 homes for a huge population in Phoenix. Now we have maybe like 23,000 homes. It's like, oh my God, that's crazy. Back in the day in 2008, when we had a crisis and a housing crash, we had about 50,000 homes on the market. We have 23,000 active. But guess what else that's changed between 2008 and 2022? Our population growth has gone up. So when people are like, oh my God, we're going to have 50,000 homes on the market, we're going to have a crash. No, we actually still have a housing shortage. And that's why you see so many apartments going up, because we still need housing. And a lot of new home builders are slowing their builds because interest rates, construction costs, and all that. So we still don't have enough homes, believe it or not.
Yeah. And I've been talking to a lot of our investors about this over the last year. Is if you didn't own something, you didn't buy something in the last 12 months, and maybe in the next couple more months, you still have an opportunity to get in, but it's going to be very difficult to buy. You think about all the people who own real estate right now. What percentage of them have an interest rate over 3%? Only the people that bought in the last 3 months, literally. Yeah. Everybody else refinanced or purchased, and they're at 3 to 3.5 on their home.
Right.
Likely.
No, absolutely.
So if those people go, they have to move, they get relocated for their job, or whatever their case is, they're going to have a real financial decision to make. They're in a home at 3% interest rate. What are they going to do in a market where their interest rate is 6%? Like we're talking about, interest rates kind of equate to cutting in half the value or doubling, however, whichever you want to look at it. So if the rates are 6%, your 3% is like really awesome. And you're probably able to rent it out for more than you're paying. So why would you try to capitalize on your potential equity in the property if you're in that situation? And so there's going to be a lag in people trying to sell their home, because a certain amount of them will sell, but a certain amount of them will decide it's better for me financially with the rate I'm at right now to hold on to this long term and just rent it out.
Right.
And so that's going to cause even more pressure on that inventory.
Right. It's mostly a stalemate. People don't want to get rid of that low rate, so they're not going to sell their house to buy another home. And, you know, in normal circumstances, people either can't qualify for two homes, or they need the equity from their existing home to put down on their new home. It's called a contingent offer. So you have to sell your house to buy a house in this transaction. But like psychologically, like, why am I getting rid of this low rate to get double the rate? And here's my advice to that, is that there's no prepayment penalties anymore. So believe it or not, Ted, back in the day, there were prepayment penalties. So lenders and loan officers actually got paid more for a longer prepayment penalty because the investor knew that if I had a prepayment penalty of 3 or 5 years and have a huge, like, this is not like $200 or $500. This is like $20,000 or $30,000 or $40,000 that you would have to pay to get out of that mortgage. So people are stuck in that, or they refinance and paid it because they wanted to get cash out or sell their house. We don't have prepayment penalties anymore. So if you buy a house and the rate is at 7% now, and then guess what? 2023 comes up and you're refinancing and you're five, you know, on like a $400,000 purchase, you can save probably like $350-$400 a month per month. Mm-hmm. So that's significant. So
yeah.
Don't always worry about what the interest rate is at the time. Think about the home that you can afford because you have to make sure you make the mortgage payments. Have a reserve fund for the emergency funds, like the air conditioning unit, you know, plumbing, all that stuff. And then if you're an investor, because I want to tie it back to Jason and his business, is that if you want to be an investor, you know, have money in the bank, you know, and get a proper management company. Access Properties, a great company, FYI, for the plug, because it's a pain to manage your own properties. You know, you're dealing with emotional people that, you know, I think Jason, you told me this one time where the oven broke on Thanksgiving Day or something. So like all the craziest things that can possibly happen, and you get what you pay for. And instead of managing your own property, get a professional, because property management is not sexy, you know, and it's stressful, and you get what you pay for. So if you think, oh, I can just collect rent and give them my cell phone number if the AC goes out, you know, it's like, okay, what happens when you go on vacation? You want to be bothered by that? Like,
well, and interesting you mentioned that, because when I started my real estate brokerage, it was immediately after the housing crash. So I transitioned from loans to real estate brokerage
during
that time. And I was helping investors buy property, and they asked for referrals out for management. And what attracted me to that was like the idea that when home sales slow down, and this is why I started the management side, the management team that we have right now, is that, you know, it builds a relationship. So it satisfied that need that we talked about before in the last episode, where you're like, well, you like to help people, you like to explain. And so that part of it was kind of, that box was checked, because we could help people on an ongoing basis. And we're helping investors who want to buy or sell down the road. So it was good fit for lean times, I felt like. And it was something to do at those times while you're waiting for another transaction. So when I talk to new agents, or we're talking to maybe experienced agents who are looking for a new brokerage or something like that, that's one of the aspects that I do talk about, is how our management team can help them with their existing clients, and also help, they can help us, you know, whether it's working on our properties or working on our inventory of homes and commercial properties, but
in diversifying.
Yeah. So and just not having all your eggs in one basket, right? So you have something to do at all times.
Right. You can sell management, you can focus on buyers, you can focus on sellers. And usually a great opportunity, if you know, for agents out there, is that if you're like, oh, I'm dealing with this renter right now. Guess what? That renter eventually is going to be a buyer.
Yeah.
So like focusing on that relationship, so in turn they'll eventually buy.
That was actually one question I had for you. I wrote down was, what would you recommend doing now if you wanted to buy a home? If that was your goal, was to buy a home from a financial loan perspective, what would you do now?
Like, what would I do now to prepare to buy a home in the future?
Correct.
Okay. So first I would know what your credit scores are. You can get a free credit report. You don't have to buy all those I call them scam, so to speak. Annualcreditreport.com is a free credit report. The government came out with that. Annualcreditreport.com. You can look at your credit report and make sure that things are accurate. Have some money in the bank for a down payment, and then have an emergency fund. I truly believe that if you don't have at least 6 months of your expenses in a liquid fund, then you shouldn't be buying a house. I can't tell you about these down payment assistance programs that the rates are higher. You can get zero down and you have no money in the bank. So what happens when your AC goes out? You're going to put on a credit card? You know, you're hot. Yes. Yeah. Or plumbing goes out. So, you know what your credit score is. Debt to income is really important. So the amount of debt, monthly debt versus your income is really important. Ideally, you shouldn't be going over 45% of your debt versus your income. And if you're not ready now, make it a goal, you know, to buy down in the future.
And I would add to that, talk to real estate professionals like Jeremy Schachter at Fairway Independent Mortgage, because these conversations do not cost money.
There's no cost in asking questions.
Gather information.
Gather information. And I always say, you're the one making the mortgage payment every month. You know, so if you want this $4,000 mortgage payment every month, you know, that's coming out of your own funds. All I can do is guide you in the right direction, get you approved for a loan, making sure you have a really good experience. But at the end of the day, this is your home, your expense, and make sure you do a really good job in doing your due diligence.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Jeremy. It was a pleasure. It's nice to see you.
Likewise. And
we'll look forward to more information next time.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us, Jeremy. One last time, if you wanted to get your website and your phone number out there.
Sure. The website's mortgageloans.com. And my phone number is 602-265-LOAN with an exclamation point. Thank you, gentlemen.
You got to do a unison on that. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you guys. We hope to have you back again, Jeremy, in the not-too-distant future.
Yes. So awesome. Thank you again.
Very much. We will see you guys next week or next time.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the AXSRE podcast. If you'd like to get in contact with the show, please email axsrepod@gmail.com. You can visit Axis Property Management online at axispropertyadvisors.com. This podcast was produced by T-Door Productions. Theme song by Delicate Steve.